The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DOD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DOD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Federal News Radio's Pay and Benefits Tracker follows the latest legislation impacting federal employees. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pay and Benefits Tracker.
Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
5 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Glad you're with us. I'm Jared Serbu, and this is On DOD. Today we're going to do a technology-focused show as we talk with the director of probably one of the lesser-known offices in the Defense Department, but nonetheless a really important mission. The Army Information Technology Agency has some major responsibilities here in the Pentagon and in the surrounding area. ITA's director is Don Adcock, and he's our guest this week. Mr. Adcock, good of you to be with us. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So as I sort of began to allude to in the intro, you have Army in your name, but your customers and your responsibilities go way beyond just the Army. You want to walk us through what ITA is, first of all, and what some of your roles and responsibilities are here in the Pentagon?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the Army does have the executive agency for this role, the role of providing common IT services to the Pentagon and the Pentagon community. Over the years, the Army has sort of grown that mission to where we are today. It started more kind of a focus just after 9/11, where the Pentagon had to deal with how do we take all of the IT that spread throughout the building. Just before 9/11, the Pentagon had IT, server rooms, servers, transport, spread throughout the entire Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And as a result of 9/11, we realized that what we need to do is consolidate, put those things into specific areas, and then come up with a very highly survivable program that ensured and protected the integrity of the information here in the Pentagon. So right after 9/11, they created what was called the Single Agency Manager. They consolidated a lot of organizations from around the Pentagon into what we know today as the Information Technology Agency. In doing that, it allowed us to start really the laying the groundwork for some of the major initiatives we see today, like data center consolidation initiatives, high survivable, highly redundant IT operations here within the National Capital Region and specifically within the Pentagon. So as a result of those efforts, what we did in the Pentagon is started consolidating our server rooms. We put them into specific areas around the building. We stopped allowing people to have their own data centers underneath mm-hmm. their desk or in a hallway closet or even very large, robust data centers around the Pentagon. And then we gave that mission to the Information Technology Agency, again, like I said, as the common IT provider for the Pentagon.
And give us a sense of the overall, you know, scale and scope of your operation in terms of rough overall budget, the numbers of people that work in this office.
Sure. So the agency is about 1,800 to 2,000 people strong. It's a mix of military, civilian, and contractor personnel. We have right around a $500 million, $540 million a year budget where we actually do a whole array of IT with that money, everything from engineering design, build, test, integrate, deploy, and then sustain, operate, and maintain.
Mm-hmm. And when I think of all the IT architecture that's in this building, it seems to me you're supporting NMCI for the Navy and the Marine Corps, you're supporting Land War Net for the Army, you're supporting God knows how many Air Force networks, God knows how many classified networks. I'm sure I'm leaving dozens out. How do you take that IT soup and bring it together into something that resembles a common operating environment?
It's a great question. One of the ways we do it is through the Pentagon Governance Board and the Architecture Board. I tell you, though, that is a very large high-level review board of senior executives from across the Pentagon community. So we take the soup, if you will, and we review it from that perspective. But one of the things that I found shortly after coming on board 2 years ago is that we didn't have a real good understanding and definition of our architecture. One of the things that I worked hard for over the last 2 years and that you'll see in the ITA strategic plan is the creation of a enterprise management capability where I have capital planning and investment, architecture, and governance to help offset the things that these high-level strategy boards kind of don't address for me. Mm-hmm. One of those things is how do I make all of these different networks work within the building, still providing a standard? Mm-hmm. And that was very difficult, and no one had really addressed it prior to me being here. And so what we're doing now is setting up an architecture, and we're trying to baseline what is the current architecture, and then what are the things that we're driving towards. If we do that, we can understand the gaps. Understanding those gaps will be our first steps in really addressing how to make them all fit here in the building.
Mm-hmm. And as you go through the process of making all that fit together, is it sort of negotiation with the services and trying to convince them to come on board and get what you want them to do, or is there a directive somewhere that says, here's what you must do?
There is a directive that says, here's what you must do. It's called DoD Directive 82.1. That said, the directive is just that. It's a Department of Defense directive, so it's very broad. It says that you must use our transport and you must lend yourself to common IT within the building. But it also allows the services and the tenants within the Pentagon to do a lot of things on their own. So NMCI is here in the building. Land Warnet is here in the building. Each one of the service components run their own IT, but certain common aspects of IT like data center, like transport, has to run through the agency.
And as you mentioned, you have a new strategic plan that takes you through 2016, I think, and beyond, which we'll definitely talk about a good amount during the course of the hour. But in reading through that, it really builds off a lot of the work you've already done here in the Pentagon. And so I'd like to hit on a little bit more of that first. You mentioned briefly data center consolidation, which you were doing long before it was a hot topic in the federal government. And you mentioned 9/11 was a driver for that. I wonder, does that make it harder to do further consolidation once the mandates from OMB came down because you have already done so much consolidation?
I don't think it makes it harder. The part that makes consolidation of data center within the Pentagon hard is each one of the services and agencies that are a tenant within the Pentagon, they have their own consolidation initiative within the service or agency. That adds a complexity because what we have to do is really be the broker between what is the service and the agency doing, what will the residual be here in the Pentagon, mm-hmm. and then how do we consolidate that. And so it actually has helped because the services are being putting together their plans, and they're having to consolidate within the services and the agencies. So what's left here is what do we do with the data that's in the Pentagon? I am working very closely with DISA and the senior leadership within DISA to put together that relationship right now to understand as the services and agencies consolidate within their own realm here in the Pentagon, we will then be able to have capacity that we can either reuse throughout the department or in partnering with DISA, I can leverage that with DISA, offering a service to them to house data here if needed. And then also, I guess to really address your point, what we're finding here is the next step of consolidation would have to be virtualization. As the services consolidate within their data centers, it's going to leave room, obviously, here in the Pentagon. And if we want to continue to consolidate within the Pentagon, the next logical step to me seems to be virtualizing the information. The more I can virtualize, the more I can say, bring me your data and not your server, mm-hmm. then the more I can narrow it down and continue to consolidate and put the Pentagon data centers in a more strategic location and a more consolidated position.
So most of what you've done so far has been physical consolidation, and virtualization really hasn't taken hold in the building yet. Is that what I hear you saying?
That is correct. So right now, from my perspective, as a service provider, most of the tenants allow or have worked with me to virtualize some of their apps, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. Most of them have their own efforts ongoing right now. What we're getting ready to understand or work with the joint staff, let's say, is what should stay here, and then of what staying here, what should we virtualize, and then how do we move forward and do that?
Right. And I don't know if you have the numbers off the top of your head, and I know consolidation is often hard to quantify in a lot of ways, but do you have a sense of how much you've consolidated so far and how much is left out there that you might be able to achieve?
ITA has 14 consolidated server rooms throughout the Pentagon. It covers about 44,000 square feet. The consolidated server rooms in the Mark Center, which is just down the road, is around 11,000 square feet. We have over 9,000 servers across the National Capital Region. Of them, about 3,000 belong to the United States Army. We have about 300 terabytes of data, and 200 terabytes of that is HQA, Headquarters Department of the Army data. So that's at least a snapshot on how big our data centers are. I will tell you that one of the hardest parts about it, and one of the things that I would offer to anyone listening that's going to go through a consolidation effort is...
And everyone is.
You need to know what you have. Yeah. And you need to be very vigilant in documenting what your current state is and what you're utilizing as far as all sorts of resources, because people do then come back and say, well, are you more green today and how do you know? Do you use less HVAC? Are you using less energy? What was the floor space prior? Prior to 9/11, when we started moving things out, we really, as a Pentagon, didn't have a good handle on just what was where. And so that's one of the reasons why it's hard to come up with those definite numbers. We literally took servers from offices very much like the one we're sitting in now and moved them into server rooms. So, you know, it's hard to justify or quantify how much, you know, floor space that was,
right.
and then what we moved it into. I can tell you, though, that we've been able to keep one or two of the data centers pristine. And when I say pristine, we've been able to keep it very low traffic, and there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of use of the space right now. And the reason that we did that is for exactly what I was mentioning before, which is we want to be able to virtualize. So if I can keep an environment that doesn't have anyone hoteling or having their servers in there, if I can keep it pristine, I can put my own servers in there, and then I can start leveraging relationships with the tenants in the building and saying, okay, I want you to move into the new data center. I want you to virtualize what you're doing. We'll help you get there. I can use the PAC, Pentagon Area Council of CIOs community, to help get us there through resourcing. And then once I start that activity, I can then go back to the older data center or the one that I'm trying to clear out, shut that down, and through that would come the consolidation, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Need to take a quick break here. We'll come back in just a minute and start digging into the Information Technology Agency's strategic plan, a fairly new plan. We're talking with Don Adcock, the director of the Army Information Technology Agency, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is on DOD. I'm Jared Serville.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
There are some incredibly sophisticated capabilities that can be unleashed in this commons called cyberspace that you will not be able to anticipate and you won't see coming. So part of your plan is to defend, part of your plan is to mitigate, and part of your plan is to recover.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Justice Department and the Department of Health and Human Services are reporting record-breaking health care fraud recoveries for 2011. The program returned $4.1 billion to the Medicare Trust Fund and the Treasury last year. That includes $2.4 billion in bogus claims they recovered in civil court and $1.3 billion in fines and restitution in criminal cases. Officials credit a new anti-fraud team the two departments created in 2009.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com. Peter Levin, Ph.D., Senior Advisor to the Secretary and Chief Technology Officer, Department of Veterans Affairs, commented during the panel discussion titled Electronic Health Records 2.0, What Does the Future Hold? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
We spend a lot of time in the government actually fixing things that are obsolete as opposed to investing in things that could actually move us further along the quality, safety, and cost curve.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Electronic health records can offer benefits for patients, providers, and payers, but have not yet realized their full potential. Booz Allen Hamilton believes the next 5 to 10 years will see vast changes in the EHR environment as mobile health applications proliferate, information is more readily shared, and EHRs take on a key role in delivering high-quality patient-centered health care. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
On the move but need your CAPS info? CAPS Mobile lets you use your mobile phone to stay connected to the CAPS. Receive breaking news and special offers by text message. Check live scores and stats with a CAPS mobile app. Enter Text to Win contest for great CAPS prizes and much more. To join the CAPS mobile club, text CAPS to 43803 now. For more info on all CAPS mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCAPS.com. Stay CAPS connected with CAPS Mobile.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is Arena Stage. Join Arena Stage Artistic Director Molly Smith and Gala Chair WUSA9's J.C. Hayward at the Golden Gala on Monday, March 26, featuring Broadway sensation Kate Baldwin and honoring Senators Thad Cochran and Patrick Leahy. This enchanted evening of dining, dancing, and entertainment benefits arts education programs at Arena Stage. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is on DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest this week is Don Adcock, the Executive Director of the Army Information Technology Agency. And I want to start digging into the new strategic plan that your agency has. And as I read through it, you seem to have worked pretty hard to work around the broader DOD framework of trying to build enterprise architectures, other directives that we've seen come out from the DOD CIO and other places lately. Talk to me about how you built this new strategy and how it fits into the bigger DOD picture.
Yeah, you know, Jared, one of the hardest things about putting out a strategy as a common IT provider in a place like the Pentagon is understanding what each one of my customer bases are doing. I mean, most of them have large IT organizations themselves, like the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, mm-hmm. the DOD, and each one of them are putting out guidance on what they're trying to do to reach the broader government and DOD spectrum of consolidation and moving forward. As you know, the DOD recently put out their IT strategy and roadmap, and Ms. Takai called for a $5.2 billion decrease in IT spending through IT reform. Secretary McHugh of the Army also did the same thing that Lieutenant General Lawrence is working on right now. As what I did to come up with the ITA strategic plan is to take each one of those organizations' strategies, read through it, and understand what it is they're trying to accomplish. I always view the Pentagon as sort of a microcosm of the Defense Department. We have everybody, to include the defense agencies here right. in the building. So through that, I have to try to help them emulate what they're going to be doing in their respective areas. So the first thing we did is a complete review. We participated in a lot of the boards and panels and working groups and discussions that helped each person put their plan together, their strategies together. And then I took those and I tried to sort of compile them into what's best for the Pentagon. In doing that, what we put out is really a three-horizon strategy. It's time-based over three horizons that take us from now into 16 and basically covers 10 primary objectives. They're focused around my organization because in order to make massive consolidations in technology, I also looked at ITA and said I have to consolidate and work on consolidation of the agency. So the very first objective of the first horizon is just that. It's taking a look at ITA. It's looking at where we have duplicative services, duplicative roles and responsibilities, and reorganizing ITA so that it isn't duplicative and is consolidated. One of the things I said shortly after coming over to ITA 2 years ago and taking over as the executive director is that I would lay out a strategy, a vision, a strategy. I would build an organization around that so that I could deliver the strategy, and that I would leverage partnerships and relationships with the community to help me fulfill the vision. So we have a vision, and that's to deliver an unparalleled customer experience. I built a three-horizon strategy of 10 objectives covering the organization, technology, our customer base, and security or cybersecurity to help me achieve that vision. And then just this past month, I had a town hall where I released a new organizational chart that's structured around actually executing the strategic plan.
Back to the organization piece that you started with, you call for there to become a functionally aligned organization. How is that different from what you have now, and how does that impact what you need to do even with your workforce?
ITA, prior to becoming a functionally aligned organization, was an organizationally based organization. If we had network issues, it was in the network directorate, and we had if it's a data center issue or data or computing, it was in the data center directorate. And what I've wanted to do and what I felt was important for us to do is take that and move it into data services or transport services. So where I have an agency that delivers services to the end user. So what does that do for me? As I looked around each one of my directorates, we had, I think, 14 different directorates in ITA. Each directorate had its own self-supporting entities. So it was able to do a little bit of its own acquisition, a little bit of its own engineering, a little bit of its own architecture. And I didn't have an agency approach to that. So the first thing I wanted to do is say, okay, in order for me to be as efficient as possible, I have to have one engineering approach or one architectural approach. So that is what FAI or functional alignment integration is. It's understanding where those components are throughout ITA and then consolidating them into one entity that's responsible. So we actually took from those 14 down to 6, 7 if you include my chief technology officer. So I created an office for the chief technology officer and then 6 principal directorates underneath of that, each one of them responsible for a part of the business. One would be engineering. One would be operations. And then I took like components and put them into those directorates.
It's kind of reminiscent of the way in the commercial world we get IT services, phone services, even TV services. A lot of us get them through one provider now, through one pipe, through one pair of wires. Is that sort of a model for how you're trying to organize?
It really is. So one of the things I believe in is that single agency approach here in the Pentagon. I believe that I should be able to provide common core services to the Pentagon community because they live on the reservation. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I want someone to be able to come to ITA and get a service from me and know that they don't, you know, it's one service and one service provider, not multiple services or multiple service providers.
You also mentioned in that first horizon enterprise IT asset management. Does that mean ITA is responsible for tracking each computer and each server in the building, regardless of who actually owns it?
Yes and no. So one of the things that means is we need to be able to understand what is brought onto or taken off of the network, even if it's not our asset. Now, we're able to actually see that, but I want to be able to know exactly where and what is going on within the environment. I do have the Army desktop, so I can know each and every computer that comes on and off of the network, and I want asset management to that level. But for the broader customer base that I don't actually have the desktop on, I want to be able to say where the routers and the switches and those types of things as well. So it's an end-to-end full approach to asset management, not just a desktop approach. Mm.
And as you develop and execute the strategy, you know, it's hard to talk about anything in government and especially in DOD right now without touching on the topic of declining budgets. I mean, do you see that reality as more of a challenge or more of an opportunity to help the department find savings? As you mentioned, that's one of the ways DOD is hoping to save money with more efficient IT.
Yeah, I actually look at it as an opportunity. As we continue to refine our budgets and the budgets continue to shrink or get smaller. I look at it as a challenge to us to be more efficient at the design and development and deployment of IT solutions. I absolutely designed the strategy around just that. I designed the ITA strategic plan so that as we deploy new capability, it is capability that actually helps me reduce the costs of money and of sustainment here. You know, we know that there's not a finite, absolute, never-ending ceiling of IT resources. And so what I want to be able to do is deploy something that allows me to turn off other things within the environment, consolidate them into the architecture or the framework or the technology, and then have a savings from that as well.
Mm. And since you've done some of this data center consolidation, and I think some of the services outside of the Pentagon have kind of just gotten started relative to what you've done already, has there been lessons learned that you've been able to share with the rest of the department?
There have been lessons learned. I haven't really been asked to share many of them with the department. I did actually share some of the lessons learned recently at a conference, and I've been talking more and more to people like yourself and sharing some of them. But we do have a lot of lessons learned, and am definitely willing to share them with anyone who's interested in hearing them.
Take one more quick break here and be back with Don Adcock. He is the director of the Army Information Technology Agency on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is on DoD. I'm Jared Servio.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Dude, check out my new Pioneer DEH44 car stereo with built-in HD radio technology and new HD2 HD3 channels.
HD2 HD3 channels?
Get with it, man. HD2 HD3 channels are all these new free digital radio channels.
How do I listen to them?
With the new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver. It's only $120 at Walmart.
Walmart? That's cool.
Yeah, just go to HDradio.com and check out the station guide. They're adding new channels all the time.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information. What is the U.S. Department of Energy's human capital and workforce strategy? How is energy tackling the human capital challenges it's facing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer with the U.S. Department of Energy. That's this week on the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Len Wolf, president of The Wolf Group, an international tax and investment advisory firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Screening, early and often. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you screen regularly for certain cancers, doctors will be able to better detect and treat cancer, but many people don't get the screenings, according to new data from the National Health Interview Survey. Mary White is at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Not all Americans are getting the recommended cancer screenings for breast, cervical, and colorectal cancers.
Depending on your gender and age, the recommendations can be different. For instance,
most women aged 50 to 74 years should be screened for breast cancer with a mammogram every 2 years, and women aged 21 to 65 years should be screened for cervical cancer with a Pap test at least every 3 years.
The study is in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
We are back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbin. We're talking today with the director of the Army Information Technology Agency, Don Adcock. We've been talking about the agency's new strategic plan, some of the things they've done already on data center consolidation, an area where they're ahead of the curve, I would say, over the rest of the federal government. But I want to talk now about some of the specific projects that you've been working on, both inside and outside the building. One of them, let's start outside, is just down the road at Arlington National Cemetery. And our listeners will remember the scandal that broke maybe a year and a half ago when the Army fired the then Arlington management after an IG report that found widespread management problems, mismarked graves, mislaid remains, terrible morale. And then just last month, that same IG told Congress there had been basically a complete 180-degree turnaround with the new management, and IT improvements were a big enabler of that, I know, with ITA in the lead there. So what'd you do?
Well, I tell you, we are so proud of the work that we've done. First of all, we're just proud to be affiliated with Arlington National Cemetery in that mission for the American people in the United States. I tell you, it was a challenge to go in not knowing a single thing other than what the IG report had said. But we actually did a complete review of everything in Arlington, working directly with Ms. Condon's team. We just rolled up our sleeves. Everyone knew that we had a mission to do. We worked so well together, and we did a complete review of everything. We took all the findings. We took our own review. We put together a plan. I put dedicated resources there, and we started just methodically going through line by line, piece by piece, and understanding what our approach would be. Our huge success was helping Arlington National Cemetery stand up a call center to start triaging and working with the calls. I've given a lot of talk to just that. What we did is we took our traditional IT Tier 1 service center and we said, could we make this work for the American public? We felt that it was basically the same thing. Someone calls in, they have a question, you run through the scenario with them, and at the end you have a solution, hopefully, that, you know, makes everyone happy. What we did is, with that, we did exactly that. We started scripting out these calls. That was a really big area for them. Data management, handling calls, understanding who was calling in and how long it would take for them to get a call back. So we put all of those things into our Get Well plan so that we understood how those things worked. The other thing that we did is really came out of the gate fast and furious and trying to help them document all of the data that they had. You know, they just had mounds and mounds of paperwork and data and files and records that needed to be stored electronically into an environment that was survivable in the event of a national disaster, catastrophe, anything like that. So we spent a lot of time understanding and documenting and going through and stabilizing that data, or actually just putting that data into data storage. So just really proud of the work that we've done there. We just recently had the outbrief from the IG where they came in and did another look. IT did very, very well, and we're very pleased with that. What I'm getting ready to do starting in March, April, and May is an internal review. Again, it'll be a review of the entire agency, but we're going to take a look at the work that we did in Arlington just to make sure that things are as tight as we want them to be and make sure that you know we can see what other areas we need to be focused on.
That call center, I know, is such a big deal. The executive director, Kathy Condon, who you mentioned, said that before you guys came in, phone calls would literally go unanswered. They would just sit there and ring. I don't remember what percentage it is, but it was a lot.
It was an absolute lot. I mean, we get just a large amount of phone calls that come to the call center each day. We've had we've put the same rigor to the call center that we did to the IT world. So we answer it within 3 seconds. You know, we answer every single phone call. We do warm transfers now. So if you're on the phone and you actually do need to speak to someone there, we will actually transfer you if that's what it takes. But they had no idea how many calls they even got per day. They didn't know how many would go to voicemail or just go unanswered completely. A lot of people would get very frustrated. So what we did with them is not only did we bring the rigorous discipline of the call center to them, but we also work with them to update their new website. And I don't know if you've seen that yet, but it is phenomenal, and it's a great website. I think when the American public go out and view that website and then call the service center to get directions or to find out about internment services or anything, I think that the American public should be and are very proud of what Arlington has been able to do in such a short amount of time.
And in terms of staffing that call center, I think you've told us before that you didn't just find random people off the street. This is Arlington is a special case, and you needed special people to be able to staff that center, right?
That's absolutely correct. We knew that these people would need some experience handling calls of people who have just lost a loved one that might be needing a little bit more reassurance. So we went out and we staffed the call center with folks that had that kind of training. We went back and did a little bit of research and worked with other organizations that do this to kind of find out what the skill set should be. And then we went out and actually started employing those people.
When you went into Arlington, it was basically in crisis mode and you were in rescue mode. Now that you've got things pretty well stood up there, do you see this as a long-term mission for ITA, or does somebody else take it over from this point?
I think we're in it with Ms. Condon. I think Kathy and I have agreed that we will be the IT service provider for them. Now, she does have an IT organization herself, mm-hmm. and they do some of the work there that they can do. But for the common services and things like this, we are definitely a mission partner with them.
Moving back into the building, I know another one of the things you've been working on is deploying some wireless services throughout the Pentagon. You want to describe a little bit what you're working on there?
Sure. So with the wireless services in the Pentagon, that's another victory that we sort of look to. Last year, the Pentagon governance community wanted us to deploy a wireless capability throughout the Pentagon so that people could remain productive when they come to the building. Sometimes people have to get here well in advance of their meetings so that they actually get here on time and can traverse the security in the building and things like that. They find themselves here unable to work. So what we did is we deployed a wireless capability in the Pentagon Library, the Food Court, the Metro, and the Center Court. Of the Pentagon. That allows them to come in and through CAC authentication, they can actually log on and get some basic services and be able to get to their email and things like that, remain productive while they're waiting or working from the Pentagon. We deployed it over the last 5 or 6 months, but we just actually did a major release and sort of marketing and training during the month of January, where we were actually helping people log on to the system themselves. For security reasons, we have a lot of problems with wireless, obviously, in the Pentagon. With wireless, it goes through walls. Mm-hmm. And in the Pentagon, where you have lots of different security classifications and areas, that's a problem. You don't want things penetrating through the walls. But through Li-Fi, you can have the lights, fluorescent lights, will actually be the signal. And so you can log into and use that. And it's very contained. It doesn't go through walls. And so you can make it very specific. In a place like the Pentagon, that's wonderful. Now, it's very new technology. So it's just something that a month ago, I went back to my 3 weeks ago, I went to my chief technology officer, and I tasked his organization. teach me about this, because it's something that we want to be able to use. We have people in the Pentagon who want to deploy a wireless capability in their office here, but they can't because there's a highly classified area maybe directly across the hall or just upstairs. Mm-hmm. So through a Li-Fi technology, I would be able to deploy it in my office alone. Then I could have wireless capability right here, and I wouldn't have to worry about it going through the walls or something like that. So really cool stuff. And that's where I want the agency to be. I want us to be that cool IT provider. So when they come to me, I can handle something like that and say, absolutely, we've got that for you.
My only request is figure out how to get cell phones working in this building. I think there's about two windows that I've been by that where they actually work.
That is true.
Take one more quick break here. We'll come back with Don Adcock, the director of the Army Information Technology Agency, and we'll talk about how ITA is securing all this network monetization when we come back. This is on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
Look at what the National Defense Authorization Act, signed last January, has required the Department of Defense to do, and that is require the department to implement software security assurance capabilities for both deployed software and that software that is being delivered.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud. That's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
I love my husband.
but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
We are back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and our guest this week is Don Adcock, Executive Director of the Army Information Technology Agency here on DOD. And also with us in this segment is Darren King. He also works with ITA, and he is the Director for Enterprise Information and Mission Assurance. ITA, as we've been talking about, is responsible for pretty much all the IT systems here in the Pentagon, and I want to spend this last segment talking about securing all that infrastructure. And gentlemen, the Pentagon is obviously a huge target for cyber attackers. Can you give us some kind of flavor of the attack surface of the Pentagon and how many attacks are underway on a given day and how you secure all that?
Yes, Jared. Securing the Pentagon is a daunting task, as you can imagine. And the reason why we do it is to protect the information we have in here and to help with our soldiers and sailors and Marine Corps members that are out there in fighting the wars for us. It's one of the most complex networks. It's a dynamic enterprise. It changes on a daily basis. Our threats change on a daily basis, and our vulnerabilities change on a daily basis. So it's pretty difficult. We have to be successful 100% of the time, as the threat has to be successful only once. So we probably get on the order of about a billion events per month coming into our environment. We use technology to make that more manageable, and it's probably approximately 500 events per second. So it's a lot.
We were talking earlier about the sort of heterogeneity of all the networks that you have here in the building. Does that make it more difficult to secure, the fact that there is not one network in this building?
Well, there is one network. The customer basis makes it a little more challenging,
right?
Because they are customers of our network, and we provide the enterprise services for them along with the enterprise security for them. They have the capabilities to do some of their own protections using their own networks. But for the most part, we provide all those services for the majority of our customers in the building.
So there's only one, if you will, way into and out of the Pentagon, and that is through our infrastructure and our security stacks. So that is how it is. That's how it helps us protect that environment.
Social media, relatively new phenomenon in DOD, which I think it's embraced, you know, pretty rapidly and by most accounts pretty successfully in most of its official uses anyway. How's that impacted on cyber?
Well, when the order came out for us to open up social media to people about a year ago, we've seen our events probably double or triple. The hard part was that we wanted to filter out some, if you want to just call it noise, from our environment. A lot of the social media is noise. People going to Facebook, MySpace, going to the internet, social web browsing. In order for us to look at the real threat, we had to filter out that noise. We had that filtered, and then as soon as we opened up those doors, that caused a lot more traffic. So we had to tune our sensors again to allow this to be more reasonable for our staff to look at the different events going through the environment.
Explain. Sorry,
I was going to say, if you remember when the department came out and sort of eased the policies on social networking for the security realm, easing something after you've tightened it up so much is kind of hard to do because you tighten something down, it has second, third, and fourth order effects on something. So as we would loosen something, I mean, we really want our customer base to have and enjoy social media, and we want them to be able to use it both within their work environment and in a personal environment on their time, but from work. But as you start started doing that, it caused a lot of problems for Darren and his team because as you know, something was so ratcheted down, to lift it up just a little bit, you had to look at the next effect. So people wanted us to basically open the door wide day one, and we tried to open it as wide as we could, understanding that it would have a second and third order effect. But it's been about a year now, Darren, wouldn't you say? And it's really come a long way, and we haven't had any problems. So.
Yes, sir. It was like a faucet. When you first turned it on, they wanted it to flow really fast. We couldn't capture all the water and slow it down. So we had to see and do it at a manageable way.
And when you say that events doubled or tripled when this all started, when the social media gateways opened, is that just a natural effect of those security postures loosening a little bit, or was it because of the use of social media itself?
I think it was a combination of people using the capability because it wasn't there before, and it was also for us to turn off some of those sensors. So it's just a natural progression.
One assumes that you have pretty sophisticated procedures for detecting threats to the Pentagon, detecting attacks to the Pentagon. How do you measure those, and how do you share information about threats beyond the Pentagon to the extent that you do?
Well, we work in partnership with Cyber Command, with Army Cyber, the cyber elements of all the different agencies and services out there. The DoD has common processes and technologies to do that. They have regulations for us to follow, for us to get those information shared. So we just follow the normal DoD procedures.
The Pentagon is its own incident response, and so there are some very definite ways that we report things up and down to U.S. Cyber Command, to Army Cyber Command, or any of the cyber incident response mission areas. One of the things we're real proud of is Darren and his team have built a world-class security infrastructure. It's defense in depth. It's layered defense security. He's done such a great job over the last few years building a really robust cybersecurity program that a lot of times we host some very high-level executives and general officers from U.S. Cyber Command, from Army, from Air Force, from Navy. They come in and they want to know exactly how we do protect the nation's Defense Department headquarters, and if you kind of look at this building and who's in the building, clearly one would assume that it is a high target, as Darren laid out with some of the statistics. Darren's been very able to put together a robust defense in depth security protocol, if you will, that's helped us survive in an area where I do have other networks within my core network, other activities within my core network. That I don't necessarily have 100% control over. It makes it a very dynamic environment, hard to control, but every day it takes a very talented team of subject matter experts to pull that off.
And Darren, I'm not expecting you to describe your procedures in detail, but as those generals and other high-level folks have come in, have some of the things that you've done actually gotten exported to other parts of DoD? Like, for example, are they now being used in DISA decks and other data centers around the Defense Department?
I would say yes, because some of the requirements that we build into our system have different capabilities. It's kind of logical if you know cybersecurity, what you want to look for, how you want to look for it, based on the threat, based on the vulnerabilities, and based on your capabilities you want to project. So we've shared that with all the different DoD elements, including Cyber Command, and some of their recent task orders have involved some of our capabilities.
I guess they say emulating someone is one of the highest forms of respect that you can get. Recently, some parts of the intelligence community came out and asked for us to share at levels that we've not been asked to share before so that they can replicate some of the things that we're doing. And so we kind of were caught a little off guard by that, but of course want it to help. Of course, we want to share, and it's one U.S. government and one Defense Department intelligence community. So we were very proud of the fact that they came to us and asked us some very specific questions on how we could help them even improve theirs. So we're proud of that.
In just about the 2 minutes that we have left, I just want to ask quickly, as we look to the future, you've already described your strategic plan. There's a bunch of future stuff in there, but any major challenges, any major opportunities that you see for ITA in the coming years, whether that relates to cybersecurity or anything else?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge we're facing right now is the consolidation of the networks. Data center, that's going to happen. Consolidating data and data centers seems to be easy. Consolidating, the department wants to consolidate networks. We want to go somewhere from one to several hundred. There's probably the right number of networks. So there's a huge effort ongoing there. I think as we go down the path, none of it's difficult from a technology perspective. I think it's really difficult from a policy perspective. And so getting that policy right, making sure we address people's needs, understanding the differences between each one of the communities, and staying true to what makes them different, I think that's going to be the hardest part. But I really do think that as, you know, resources become more scrutinized and less, it's going to drive these changes. So I think for the first time ever, we actually have that change agent that we need, or maybe the first time in a long time. We have, you know, we're coming out of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Budgets are shrinking. The Defense Department has to reshape. And as we do those things, we have that driving force factor to make these changes.
Don Adcock is the executive director of the Army Information Technology Agency. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Jerry.
Also joining us for this segment was Darren King. He's the director for Enterprise Information and Mission Assurance here at the Information Technology Agency at the Pentagon. You're listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any of this show, you can go to federalnewsradio.com, search term On DoD. I'm Jared Serbit. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you know someone who has done outstanding work in the field of human capital management? Nominate them today for Federal News Radio's Causey Awards. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTOPFMHD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
CNN Radio, I'm Michelle Wright.